You're listening to the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring attorney, guest, and former felony prosecutor Eric Fardis.
Alec Murdaugh on the road to a new trial. Wait, what's this? The judge said no. That doesn't mean it's the end by any means. In fact, this is really just the beginning of probably a very lengthy appellate process. But we started somewhere, and we started with evidence. We started with a juror flat out saying, yeah, Becky Hill influenced my decision. Yes, she said these things to me. And yes, it did affect the outcome of what I voted for in the guilt of Alec Murdaugh. But Judge Toll still said, nope, not enough. Here to discuss, Robin Dreeke, retired FBI special agent. Robin, were you surprised that this is how it all played out the other day in court?
I was a little surprised, actually, because I think Becky Hill really overstepped what she should and shouldn't do in her position of trust. But at the same time, though, my initial impression I had was relief.
Yeah.
Because you would hate for a righteous conviction to get overturned or to be retried because of one fool that did things that she shouldn't have done. So I was really happy with the system. I'm so glad it was a new judge that did this and not Judge Newman. He recused himself. You know, we're seeing such a difference, I think, in the system down in South Carolina compared to Delphi, where we have two trials, or, you know, one potential, you know, upcoming trial in Delphi, where we have a lot of things going sideways in that whole system. And every week there's more sideways stuff. There's more craziness and we're trying to right that ship. But down in South Carolina, where it looked like, again, our conjecture from the outside looking in, where Alec Murdaugh and his whole cabal of people around him and his family for his entire life kind of ruled that system. We're like, oh man, is he going to get away with this? You know, does he seem to know everyone that is kind of an inside job? And, you know, someone's going to be there at his defense and say all these nice things. But once again, it looks like the system is working, and that gives us trust and confidence in that system. Whereas you have an individual that makes a mistake. You know, Becky Hill made numerous mistakes with her conduct, but the system is playing out and not ruining, I think, a righteous conviction.
And that's an interesting way to look at it, because I think it can also be argued the other way and say the system is not working.
You're right. My own confirmation bias coming in. I want the Murdaugh away.
Your no confirmation bias is wrong. I mean, it's not, I don't know. I mean, it could be looked at, this is very much a righteous conviction if you're on the side that Alec Murdaugh did this. And I think most of us are, you know, at least to a certain extent of he knew that what happened, or that he knew of, or who, or what, if you're not direct involved. But if we're going to say that the system worked correctly, isn't the system designed, though, that if there, this is the whole purpose of the hearing, if there is some sort of impropriety, and the bar was set, I mean, the judge basically said we would need someone to say that their verdict was, in fact, influenced directly by Becky Hill, and they got that. So it's like, the points were made. The goal was scored.
Question, because like what I read yesterday, I have it right here, and that's why I'm a little confused on this one potentially, because I have right here, all the jurors testified, they stood by their verdict, they were not swayed by anything Hill may have said. Was there something different on that, or?
Well, one of the jurors in there flat out said, no, it was juror Z is the one who flat out said that my decision was influenced by Becky Hill. And yes, Becky Hill did say these things to me. All the other jurors went along with the rest of the path saying, no, this was our verdict. We don't recall Becky saying these sort of things. But there's the one that is saying that, yes, in fact, my decision was influenced by Becky Hill. It wasn't really elaborated on very well. It was kind of a, I would say, somewhat weak testimony. At one point, they were even asked, it was something to the effect of, did she say anything else other than, you know, watch out or keep an eye on his his motions, his movements, things of that nature. And did she say anything else? The question was, I don't really remember. It was simply the facts that were stated was that, yes, this influenced. I felt pressure from the other jurors, and I felt pressure from Becky Hill, almost painting it that he was already guilty. So She did at the end of this, or at the end of the actual trial, you know, when they ask, is this your verdict? She confirmed, yes, this is my verdict. So to be able to go back and change that now, I guess, does put into question the rules and the law. And I mean, if we're going to be able to do this right now and say that I was influenced or my decision would have been changed, I mean, you'd almost have to go back to every trial and go to every juror and say, hey, is your opinion still the same now? Or were you influenced? I mean, then you could almost reverse any trial if we're going to go down that road. So I don't know. It's a weird, sticky gray area that's really hard to get a grasp on what is right and what is wrong here.
Very true. And from what I've read and what I'm taking away from this is that she wouldn't have changed her decision in the verdict that she came up with. But yes, Becky Hill changed her thought process and how she engaged. And the way you laid it out there, I thought was really relevant too, Tony. And that is the jurors were pressuring her, or Becky Hill was pressuring her. What popped in my mind as you're saying that is, yes, you know, when you're a jury of 12, you're communicating with each other. You're collaborating to come. And so, yeah, there's going to be a lot of pressure. You're going to have dominant personalities. You're going to have non-dominant personalities. So my conjecture potentially is that the way the judge looked at Becky Hill in this case was that she wasn't any more of an influence than another juror might have been in the same situation. In other words, Becky Hill broke that, you know, that, you know, what are they called? The fourth dimension, whatever.
Yeah, like the fourth wall.
Yeah, the fourth. She broke that fourth wall that shouldn't have been broken between her and the jurors and made herself, you know, as another juror, as a communication type person.
Yeah.
But at the bottom line, I think, was that the juror themselves said they did not change her verdict because of it. They changed her behavior or their thought process because of her. But just like they do with all the other jurors.
Yeah.
Again, I have my own leakage coming in here on this one because I'm so glad we don't have to go through that trial again as of now.
As of now.
As another appellate's come up.
I mean, I think it's hold your breath because he's got more opportunities to have this overturned.
And he's got great defense. He's got great defense, as we've seen, you know, so yeah, who knows
it's such a strange area of what, you know, what constitutes improprieties in the jury room. If we're going to say that feeling pressure from other jurors or feeling pressure that's going to influence your decision, that's what deliberations are. That's the whole point. I mean, to be like, there's pressure. I'm a snowflake. I can't handle the pressure. Like, that's life. That's the process.
I've been on juries. Yeah. I've been a jurist, you know, on big cases.
Yeah.
And, you know, doing my civic duty. And yeah, there is pressure in there. Yeah. There's people that want to go home. There's people who don't want to stay out here for three more days. I mean, there are pressures on them. There's no doubt, you know, external pressures, internal pressures.
Yeah.
That's why there's 12. That's why.
And what is wrong with the, I mean, we seem to be in a place in our world where there is pressure on someone or something for some reason. It's looked at as this is wrong. This is bad. Rather than this is life. This is how decisions are made. This is how we get to a cohesive decision amongst a group of 12. So it's a weird argument to be made, but it is certainly one that attempted to be made there. Well, we're back on the Delphi merry-go-round with Francis Gull, and we got Richard Allen's attorneys back, Baldwin and Rossi, and everybody's back on the merry-go-round, except for, you know, the whole reason we're on this merry-go-round, trying to find answers to the questions of who killed those two little girls. We're back to litigation land. Joining me to discuss, Eric Faddis, attorney. Eric, motions being filed this week again, now from Baldwin and Rossi, again, asking for Frances Gull to either recuse herself or for her to be removed from the case. This has already been thrown out there before. The Supreme Court didn't seem to want to make any sort of ruling on it. Where does this go from here? Because isn't it Frances Gull now who actually can decide whether or not she's impartial or not?
Right, which is such a, it just like strains the mind to think about how that judge should be allowed to determine if they in fact are being impartial and neutral to a defendant in the face of allegations that they aren't. I hate when this type of motion comes up and the trial judge gets to get up there and say, oh, no, I'm neutral. Don't worry about it. I think that really breeds a distrust in the system, because any person with common sense is going to be like, no, no, you shouldn't decide whether you have bias. An objective third party should decide whether you have bias. But that's not what's going to happen with these motions for Judge Gall to recuse.
You got that. And obviously, she's not going to go up there and say that I'm not going to be impartial. So, I mean, she has an out, which I don't know why she doesn't at this point just want to take, save a little face, unless somehow she thinks this image of her is going to be helpful, which maybe it is. I don't know the answer to that. I don't see a world where that is, but none of this seems to have made a whole lot of sense to begin with. The prosecutor now also wanting the Delphi murder suspect's attorneys held in contempt. Can you explain that a little bit of, you know, here we go again. It's just like the two sides battling about everything but the case itself.
Oh, totally. Yeah, there's a ton of squabbling between the parties and their attorneys. And, you know, the prosecutor, contempt is usually when one side has knowingly defied a legal order or something like that. And so the prosecution is just kind of laying it on and trying to score some points on their side. But I think the defense motion has at least some merit. The judge did a weird thing by sort of summarily dismissing the defense attorneys. Now they're reinstated back on the case. And they're saying, hey, you shouldn't have kicked us off. That was unfavorable to the defendant. There wasn't good grounds for that. So I think the defense's motion has at least some colorable merit.
Is Gall on a mission here again to try and get them off the case? I mean, because that kind of feels like that already. I don't know. I mean, it's like, we hate you. I hate you more. No, we hate you the mostest. We hate you the morest. And it's like, okay, we get it. Nobody likes each other here. And along this whole line, people have really varying views on each other. But again, we're not at the merits of the case. Is that what we're seeing? Or is Gall again saying, I'm not going anywhere. You're going somewhere. And ultimately, I mean, she does have more power. Are we going to see Baldwin and Rossi kicked off this case again?
You know, a second dismissal of the defense attorneys against their will and against the client's will, for me, would be unheard of. I've never heard of such a thing. In fact, I don't think I've ever seen in an actual case where the judge kicked off defense attorneys because the judge thought they shouldn't be on the case. It is almost always the client's right to decide who represents them. And Richard Allen wants these attorneys, is my understanding. And so really a strange turn of events. And we're not even to the even stranger merits of the case that'll come out of trial.
I mean, at the end of the day, he has essentially a get a new trial free card. I think, why don't we just get on with this? Is this really just everyone trying to save face and not be, you know, wrong? Is that what we're dealing with here, especially with Gull?
It would just be me speculating, but it just seems like there are some personality issues that could be at play. Listen, in these jurisdictions, the attorneys know each other. The defense attorneys know the prosecutor. The prosecutors know, there is a lot of intermingling. Mm-hmm. And I can't help but wonder if there is sort of some under the surface hostility or distrust or something bizarre going on that probably shouldn't be creeping in to the criminal justice system. I don't know that for sure, but that's just a thought that came to mind.
It's, I think, a valid question to ask, and certainly something at this point to speculate on, considering how none of this seems to be making a whole lot of sense at this juncture.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advance access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.